Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, Timothy Peters, driver of the number 17 Red Horse Racing Toyota Tundra. You're listening to The Pit Stop with Tim DeSpang.
Live from Talladega, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim DeSpang and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Reverend, how you doing tonight? I had myself muted.
Hanging in there, getting a little better every day. How you feeling?
I'm feeling a lot better, Reverend. I am too. I'm feeling a lot better. The good Lord has praised us, brother.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Reverend?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, the good Lord has blessed us. Good Lord bless us. I'm glad you're feeling better. I'm feeling a lot better too, Rev.
Well, that's good. Let's get this show started, huh?
All right, go ahead, Rev.
Lord, we come before you today, and we thank you for the healing power that you have in your touch. We ask you to touch all those who are hurt. Be with them. Be with all our soldiers all over the world, all of our race car drivers, every race fan, all those in this whole country and in the whole world, Lord. Teach them the peace of knowing you. Please bless us all and bless our show today. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen, Reverend. Straight invocation. Let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website. You got the floor.
Yes, they can call me anytime at 951-232-7630. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org, and my email address is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com.
Sounds good, Reverend. Thanks again for being our official reverend. I hope y'all have a good rest of the week. Hope you get feeling more better. I know that's not proper English, but more better. And Tim, it's Petey. We said hello, brother. We'll talk at you next week.
All right. God bless you. Take care.
You too, Reverend. All right, that was the Reverend of our show, Mr. Reverend Joe. We've got Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. Stephen, how's it going up there in the Commonwealth, bud?
Doing all right up here tonight.
I know what we need. We need some rain. I mean, it has rained on the west side of Talladega, the east side of Talladega, and we ain't got it. My grass is dead, and I ain't going to water
it. Well, we've gotten plenty of rain up here, and a lot of that rain has come from out in the western part of the state and out in West Virginia, where a lot of those people have been flooded out. A couple of my family lives right out there in that area, right across the West Virginia Virginia line, right in Bath County, which is right across from Greenbrier and West White Sulphur Springs. So, you know, a lot of those people up there, they're kind of suffering with all that rain that they've had, and a lot of that rain has come down into our area. But, no rain and no flooding down my way and down your way is better than what some of those folks up in that area are going through right now.
Yeah, and to everybody up in West Virginia, our thoughts and prayers with everybody up there going through through that flooding and everything, Stephen. But thanks for taking time out to come back home again, bud. I know you always enjoy it. You're my great co-host. But the number to call in is 215-383-3681. At the bottom of the hour, we have driver of the number 93, Bell Brothers Plumbing, Heating and Air, Elk Grove Toyota, for Mr. Ron Devine and BK Racing. Mr. Dylan Lupton qualified and finished his first NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race this past weekend at Sonoma. We got him coming on. And then, Stephen, you got at the top of the hour, we've got President of Daytona International Speedway, Mr. Chip Wild. But at this time, Stephen, I have a bit of breaking news that I would like to share before. I know you got some breaking news, but I have some breaking news. Hold on. This just in, I have a statement from John West Townley that he wanted to send to Spencer Gallagher. So here is John West Townley's statement. I'm going to play it, John West Townley's statement. To Spencer Gallagher after their little deal at Gateway Motorsports Park.
I haven't been to church since I don't remember when. Things were going great till they fell apart again. So I listened to the preacher as he told me what to do. He said, you can't go hating others who have done wrong to you. Sometimes we get angry, but we must not condemn. Let the good Lord do his job, and you just pray for them. I pray your brakes go out running down a hill. I pray a flower pot falls from a windowsill and knocks you in the head like I'd like to. I pray your birthday comes and nobody calls. I pray you're flying high when your engine stalls. I pray all your dreams never come true. Just know wherever you are, honey, I pray for you. I'm really glad I found my way to church, 'cause I'm already feeling better and I thank up. And I'll keep praying for you. I pray a tire blows out at 110. I pray you pass out drunk with your best friend and wake up with his and her tattoos. A flower pot falls from a windowsill and knocks you in the head like I'd like to.
Okay, Stephen, that was a statement from John West Townley to Mr. Gallagher. Had a little bit of a ruckus out there at Gateway, didn't we, bud?
Yeah, you know, that's true. They had gotten into it just a little bit earlier on into the race, and, you know, prior to that late race incident that saw them both about six laps to the end there, saw them both in the wall, and a little bit of a fight that ensued later on. Spencer Gallagher did go on and did apologize for that later on and did issue a statement apologizing to John West Townley for that. But, yeah, and a little bit of a ruckus out there. You know, truck series, that's a fairly rough sport. And, you know, even Tony Stewart got in on this. He had some funny comments, you know, from Sonoma in the media center. Where he said, you know, in his post-race conference, where he said he's going to eat chicken for an entire week, and he said he was glad that a few more people in the sport were coming up and seeing their emotions, you know, come through and not being, you know, so bland, and you know, he was glad to see a little bit, like see some of this finally.
Yeah, and you know, Stephen. After I watched it, you know, after you posted it on your site, you know, because it was late for the race was over, I went ahead and crashed. After I watched it, I mean, it looked like both of them, they were so dog tired, they could only think of what they could do.
Yeah, it was a late race. A little bit of rain came to the area, unfortunately, and I got that race underway a little bit late out there. A little over an hour past its green flag time. Green flag was scheduled just after 8:45 Eastern Standard Time, but got going just around 9:50 or so Eastern Standard Time. And you know, this is around midnight that this happened. So it, you know, these guys were tired. They had been out there. They had been racing for quite some time around that 1.2-mile racetrack out there. So you know, that's a tough racetrack. It's always been a tough racetrack Gateway to run around.
And Stephen, you know, NASCAR normally throws down their penalties either on normally on Tuesday, but here lately they've been throwing them down on Wednesday, and it could come out any time. So I've got my media page open. Have you heard if penalties have come out yet, or do we have anything?
No, we haven't heard anything. You know, Steve O'Donnell was on XM Sirius Radio yesterday morning for his weekly chat that he gets on and talks about it. You know, he made brief mentions of this, and you know, they don't typically come out and make a statement on penalties as far as this, or Steve doesn't when he comes on for his weekly chat, and I think we're just gonna have to wait and see what's gonna happen. You know, I would suspect in this situation that I'm sure that there will be some penalties or something come down from NASCAR. Don't know what particular that they may be. But, you know, I think NASCAR will take a look at the entire incident. They'll look at all of, you know, the video and everything that, you know, culminated into this incident, and, you know, they'll make the determination on what happens. I mean, you'll have to, you know, we'll go back and, you know, if you go back to the Matt Kenseth and Jeff Gordon incident, you know, just a couple of years ago at Charlotte Motor Speedway, you know, there was some little bit going on down there at the, you know, in the garage area, and there was some fist thrown, and, you know, there were some penalties laid down, but nobody was really suspended. However, this is a different scenario. These two guys did get out of their trucks on the active racetrack, and NASCAR has not been shy about suspending people getting out of their trucks or out of their race vehicles unless there is some situation as a fire or something like that. We've seen Jennifer Jo Cobb. She was suspended in the truck series. Trevor Bayne has been suspended for getting out of his vehicle at Dover. We've seen others that have gotten out of their vehicle fined very heavily or suspended for getting out of the vehicle when there was not an incident involving a fire or some kind of safety within their vehicle that required them to get out. So I think NASCAR, anything that will be their line of thinking on why that they need to come down with a penalty with these guys getting out of their truck on an active racetrack.
Yes, Stephen. You and I know the NASCAR rule book. They're pretty good, and I'm figuring that's probably where they're going to hit them heavy. They're going to hit them heavy on that being on the hot racetrack, as you call it. Stephen, I'll go ahead and get started with the NASCAR Champion World Truck Series. They're race number 9. Like we've been talking about John West Townley and Spence Gallagher out there. Race number 9 for NASCAR Camper World Truck Series. The third annual Driven for Lyman 200 was at Gateway Motorsports Park. Christopher Bell won. Christopher Bell was P1, P2. Ben Rhodes finishing third. Daniel Hamrick finishing fourth. Johnny Sauter, fifth. Eric Jones, sixth with John Hunter Nemechek. Seventh was, we had Scott Zipadelli on last week, and I'm going to mess this. Hermann Curigo, I think I got that. Eighth was Cass Growler. Ninth was Ben Kennedy. Round out your top 10 was Mr. Timothy Peters. The time of the race was 2 hours, 14 minutes and 48 seconds. The average speed was 89.021. Margin of victory was 0.275 seconds. And your top 10 drivers in points, William Byron lead, Daniel Hemric fourth, Johnny Sauter fifth, John Hunter Nemechek sixth, Ben Kennedy seventh, Tyler Reddick eighth, Christopher Bell ninth, and round out your top 10 is Ben Rhodes. And let's see what Christopher Bell had to say in the media center there at Gateway Motorsports Park.
You are
all
but guaranteed a spot in the chase. Talk about being a victory lane
here
tonight.
Well, let me tell you, this win right here will make mine and Jerry's life way better going throughout the rest of the year. And I think we've both kind of been stressed and kind of on the nervous switch here for the last couple of weeks, just because we've been fast, but we just haven't been able to capitalize. And I've been making a lot of mistakes lately, and I've used my fair share of mulligans. But tonight, hopefully, we got it all off our shoulders, and we can move on and. And just keep rolling along. This is just the beginning.
All right. And Jerry, talk about your race here tonight. And as Christopher alluded to, it makes life a little bit easier for you now that you're in the chase as well.
Yeah, we have a lot of meetings at KBM and try to get better with our competition meetings. And Kyle sits in on everything and tries to guide, the kids. And I think that's why I got a job, because I've been doing it forever. But, he's a good one, a great one. William's a good one. We're blessed to have all that. But we're really blessed to have JBL and Toyota and Jack and Tyler and all the folks that help us. But this is going to be a relief, a big load off our shoulders. And, Kyle told me this week, he said, you finished ninth at Iowa, it's not time to jump off a bridge or anything. He says, my last three finishes have been worse than 30th. So he kind of put it in perspective. So we just roll from here.
There you go. All right, we'll go ahead and open up the questions. Please state your name and affiliation and start up front.
Diane Cox, Advantage News. Today we have a rain delay, also red flags. As a crew chief, how does that change your strategy and to work with your crew? And as a driver, how does that mess with your psyche, trying to keep your head in the game with so many delays?
Well, I'll start first. This was almost identical to last year. We did all the practicing, and then here come the rain. And so at our meeting this week, we decided that we would all try and make a good Q run and practice to try and get a decent position for starting. And we had all our notes from last year once the race started, a green track just like today. And I think that helped all of our teams. And 2 years ago, I came here with Bubba and won the race. And we've came a long way since then, but we've got a heck of a notebook starting to build up here, and it's cool to come to St. Louis.
And, Stephen, before we come up on our guest on the bottom of the hour, we're getting really close. I know there were some sprint cut rule changes, and there was something going on with Matt Tibbs. Do you have any information on that?
I guess we'll just stay with the Truck Series right now because Matt Pitt is running the Truck Series. He has been filling in a little bit over there at Red Horse Racing this season, as well as he also runs in NASCAR Xfinity Series for Jugage Racing. Matt Tift has been out for the last couple of weeks, suffering from a back issue in his back. However, there is ongoing issues that have gotten worse for him. Jugage Racing today has announced that Matt Tift will be out for an indefinite amount of time, that during the evaluation of his back conditions that were related to his discs in his back, that there is a low-grade brain tumor at the base of his brain that he will have to undergo surgery for. He is going to have surgery, rehabilitation, and then he will hopefully be cleared at some point to return back to racing. But there's no timeline for this right now. So as of right now, Jugage Racing and Red Horse Racing, he will not be in a truck or an Xfinity Series. But Jugage Racing this weekend has announced that David Reagan will take over the number 18 Xfinity Series Toyota Camry for them at Daytona International Speedway.
Well, dang, our thoughts and prayers go out to Matt Tift and everybody there involved in that, Stephen. Which, me and you have back issues, but I didn't know nothing about the tumor.
Yeah, no, that's you know, something that they found out as just as they were working with his back disc issues, and this just kind of cropped up along with it, and hopefully this will not proceed any further than that. It doesn't sound like this is of any seriousness, but he will just go undergo the operation, and hopefully at some point in the future he'll return back to racing. But, you know, as of right now, there's no timeline, and he's on an indefinite hold for a return to any type of racing.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that update, Stephen. I've been really busy. I hadn't had time to check my email and stuff. But, yeah, thanks for that. Stephen, if you want to go ahead and start with the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series after Snowman, we've got a few minutes before Dylan comes on. You got the floor.
Yeah. Also with the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, I'll just run through this really quickly too. NASCAR has updated the rule book starting this weekend at Daytona International Speedway, starting with Saturday night's Coke Zero 400. Per the rule book, NASCAR in the Sprint Cup Series has always fell back on practice times in determining the race eligibility and the starting positions of an event per if it were to be rained out or some other adverse conditions for not only the pole, but also for all starting positions. However, as I said, this weekend, starting with the Coke Zero 400 in the Sprint Cup Series only, NASCAR will now revise the rule book, and all starting positions will fall based on current owner year points. Additionally, NASCAR has announced that if a team were to lock themselves into the chase and they do not have a charter, this is an open team that doesn't have a charter, such as the Wood Brothers or another team out there. If they are top 30 in points, they have a win, and they are locked into the chase, they will be guaranteed a provisional starting position in every chase race, regardless of what happens, no matter what. So NASCAR has made that determination that so the charter teams were already guaranteed in a race, so all open teams, if they were to qualify now for the chase going forward, NASCAR has revised the rule book, and that as an open team, you are now guaranteed to make every single chase race with that eligibility. So those are the two NASCAR changes that NASCAR has made in the Sprint Cup Series, only the Xfinity and NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, will not change. Those two will stay the same with practice speeds to determine both the qualifying and, you know, their chase system intact. But going back to this past weekend at Sonoma Raceway, Tony Stewart pulled this one out in late goings out there with a little bit of pit strategy. Three turns out there to go to the checkered flag. Denny Hamlin got past Tony Stewart. And on the final turn, Tony Stewart was able to pull this one out, winning the 28th annual Toyota Save Mark 350 for his 49th career victory in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series. It's also his first victory and third top 10 in 2016, and his third victory out there at Sonoma. Stewart's last win came at Dover on June 2nd, 2013, 3 years ago, 110 Sprint Cup Series events. Stewart starting 84 of those because of missed races. Stewart's now 32nd in the points. He's 9 points out of 30th place, which he needs to qualify to get into the chase and lock himself in. Denny Hamlin finishing second out there. Joe Logano third. Chase Elliott was the highest finishing rookie at 21st. And Kevin Harvick continuing to lead the points by 35 over Kurt Busch.
And Stephen, let's listen to a little bit about what Tony Stewart had to say to me. It sounds like it's Sonoma Raceway.
All right, we're joined in the Sonoma Raceway Media Center by race winner Tony Stewart, driver of the number 14 Code 3 Associate Mobile 1 Chevrolet. How you doing?
Keep going, you're doing great.
All right, we will start by opening up to the media. Questions, please. We'll start with Holly Kane and then go to Jerry Jordan and over to Phil. Go ahead, Holly.
Holly Kane, NASCAR.com. Tony, that last lap, could you just talk us through that, what that was like for you?
Well, I'll go back a lap before because I think that set up the last lap, to be honest. When I went down in seven, the second to last lap, I wheel hopped it pretty big, and Denny got right to us there. And we held him off through the rest of the lap and the first half of the last lap, but he was really close to us off of four and enough that I knew I couldn't help but cheat the corner. And I gave him the whole outside. If he wanted to go around me on the outside, I was going to give him all the room he wanted, but I wasn't going to give him the inside. But I went down and wheel hopped it again, and he saw it from the lap before, and he knew to take advantage of that. So, I assume he did. He got us there. But that's when he went by us. I mean, that was probably the one thing I was most proud of, is I didn't panic and jump in the gas and spin the tires real hard trying to stay with him, and just tried to get off the corner like I had and tried to just stay with him through the corner there and get through 10 and thought maybe we could stay close enough that we could have a shot back at him. And when he went into 11, I was probably more surprised than anybody. I couldn't believe, I mean, as good as he was breaking into 11 all day, I couldn't believe he missed the corner. And they said he wheel hopped it, but I was shocked that the door was open like that. But you can't crack the door open with me on the last corner of the last lap and expect me to not take it. I was going to kick the door in or drive a bulldozer through it to keep it open. So, when you're in a scenario like that, I don't know if I'm going to get another scenario or opportunity to win a race the rest of the year. And we're going to try, but, you know, knowing that could be the difference between making the chase or not making the chase, I wasn't going to be cordial on the exit of the corner. And I roughed him up pretty good there. If it had been a street fight, he'd had two black eyes after that. So, I mean, I used him up pretty hard. But, probably one of the best parts and one of the parts that I'll probably remember most of this race was before I got to victory lane and Denny leaning in there. And the first thing he said is, I'm so damn proud of you. And, that meant the world to me. I mean, I told him right after that, I said, I had to do that. And he goes, I know. So, it just shows what kind of guys we're racing with and the respect we all have for each other. It's, you know what's on the line, you know what's at stake, and you know, especially at a place like this, when it comes down to turn 11, I mean, that's where all the action is anyway. So, I couldn't believe how clean a race it was. I mean, it just, where's that race been for the last 8 years we've been coming here? I mean, it's, you know, normally you get guys driving through each other and over each other and running each other off the road and everything, and it, we just didn't see a lot of that today. It made for a, even if we finished 16th or 17th where we were running before we, Mike made the call to come in on the pit stop. I mean, I had fun all day, and that was our goal. You know, it was, you know, we struggled all day on Friday, and all four of our cars kind of fought the same problem, and I still don't know what it is, but we still fought it. I mean, felt like the first two runs of the day we were respectable, and then it seemed like guys got better, and I couldn't match the pace anymore, and the harder I ran it, the more I made my problem worse. So you know, it was a matter of, I don't think Mike and I either way thought 17th was, I mean, that's just kind of where we were, and that's kind of where we were speed wise I think at that time. And but it was like, you know, we'd talked about four different scenarios before the race, and not knowing how much tires were going to fall off. And that's the thing, I've had some awesome crew chiefs, but that's something I'm really proud of. At Mike, he will sit there the night before the race. He won't go out, and he won't go with me to dirt races, and he won't go play. When we took crew guys to Six Flags last night, and he stayed home and did homework. And we all waved out the window and said, bye, Dad, and then stopped and said, hey, you forgot to give us money for the amusement park. He pointed at me and said I was pointing at the wrong guy, but he stayed and did his homework. I mean, that's what I'm really proud of him at, how he does that. I mean, he's so detail oriented on that, and all my crew chiefs have been, but they all have their own different style, and that's something about Mike that I really respect and appreciate. And you know, I got in this morning, and you know, best thing for me to do tonight for the race is for.
Okay, Stephen, we got our bottom of the hour guest. We ain't going back and listen to Tony Stewart after that. We don't want to leave him hanging. We've got driver of the number 93, Bill Brothers Plumbing, Heat and Air, Elk Grove Toyota for BK Racing, Mr. Dylan Lutton. Let's bring him into the pit stop, Tennessee.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Dylan, how you doing this evening, bud?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Hey, Dylan, we appreciate you taking time out to come on with us. And my this over here beside me, Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com. But I got one question. How big was the butterfly going in to knowing that you had to make it on time? There was going to be one car that didn't make it, and you made your first Sprint Cup Series race at Sonoma.
You know, I think it's kind of an uneasy feeling for everyone that doesn't have a charter going in, because, you know, one little mistake or one little mishap in qualifying and you're going home. And, you know, I think Ryan Blaney, he's made every race this year, but last year, you know, they sure found a lot of problems, you know, with rain and other little mishaps, and missed quite a few races. So, you know, even, you know, the fastest car in a non-charter deal could be going home. So, just to make the race was, you know, was our goal, obviously. We had great sponsors on board, Bell Brothers and Elk Grove Toyota, and I had a job to go out and get them in the race. So after we got qualified, you know, it was a good feeling. Wish we could have ran a little bit better, but, hey, we're in the show.
That's right, Dylan. And you was in the show and you finished it. Dylan, can you talk a little bit about how the deal come together with BK Racing and Ron Devine?
Yeah, so Mike Ford has been my crew chief for the last year and a half over at Athenia Motorsports last year, and then over at the Siegs this year. We brought him over there, and he did a few races with us. And, you know, Mike's been with quite a few teams, and he was over at BK Racing the year, I want to say 2013 or so, over there helping out. And we're sitting in the hall or in Vegas kind of bouncing ideas off of each other for my future, and he thought it'd be a good idea if me and him went over to BK Racing, started talking to Ron Devine, and trying to put some races together for this year. And you know, just worked out where we were able to make our debut together in the Cup Series in Sonoma. So it was great having a veteran crew chief Mike Ford on the pit box to make some calls. And you know, it was a group effort, and the deal took, it seemed like it took forever, but then in the last month or so, things seem to just start rolling faster and faster and faster, and now the weekend's over, so it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And, Dylan, can you talk a little bit about just how strenuous it is to actually race a road course? You know, Stephen and I, we're big on ovals. I mean, you know, I'm here in Talladega. Stephen's in Richmond. So, you know, you're sitting here at Dega, you know, you're just cruising is what I say it. But to watch everything go down at Sonoma, how you hit the rumble strips, I mean, you're on and off the gas, you're shifting. Just how strenuous is it to actually finish a race on a road course in a sprint cup car?
Yeah, you know, it's very difficult. It's a fence race, you know, all race long, 110 laps, you have to hit your shift, your downshifts just right, or, you know, you could destroy the rear end or the transmission pretty easily in these race cars. And, you know, after about three laps in these cup cars, you know, it seems like you have no rear grip at all. So just trying to put the power down on the track and get a little bit of a front drive is just, you know, it's nearly impossible. It seems like we were fighting out all day long, just trying to put the power down off of turn 7 and turn 11. It's like you have an egg shell or an egg under, you know, the pedal. But, you know, I have to say that was, you know, one of the hardest races for me I've ever had to do. You know, it was just so hot out there at Sonoma this last week, and I haven't been in a car since March, really. And it definitely kicked my butt. You know, I wasn't even feeling that good yesterday, trying to get fluids back in me. But you know, I was just suffering from headaches and stomach aches, and I just felt sore and groggy after the race. So definitely learn next time what I need to do to prepare a little bit better for these races.
I bet it was, but. And a couple more questions. Did you run a two-piece shifter or a one-piece shifter? You know, because sometimes at road courses back in the day, or not back in the day, but just not too long ago, you know, we've had shifters break. Did you have the two-piece shifter or the one-piece shifter, Bill?
I had a two-piece.
Two-piece. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you think about the new digital dashboard? And did you set it up like you wanted it or whatever? I mean, I've looked in the cars and seen it. But just what's your take on the new digital dashboard there, bud?
Yeah, so I didn't design my own little layout on the board. I just showed up to the track and sat in the car and, you know, went over it with the crew guys. But I love the new dashes. They're, you know, it's a lot easier to read off you know, water temp and oil temp, because the numbers just appeared as they were, and it had lap time. RPMs, we used it was like a digital dash or a digital reading. So it looked just like the old dashes did in setup-wise. But I was a big fan of the digital dash, and I look forward to using it again.
And Dylan, my final question, have you or can you break any news? Is there any future in you and trucks, Xfandy, or anything else you might be working on with BK Racing in the near future?
Yeah, I got off the phone with Ron Devine earlier today, and you know, we both thought this weekend went well as it could have, I guess. You know, I think all three of us BK cars, we struggled a little bit there at Sonoma and didn't get the finishes that we wanted or were expecting. But, you know, Ron Devine was pleased with my performance and how I handled myself all weekend long. And, you know, both of us agreed that we'd like to move forward together. So we're trying to put together, you know, a few more races. And, you know, it probably won't be any time in July, most likely. It's going to be August on back. But, trying to get a few more cup races, and then if there's any opportunities that come up in Xfinity or truck, we're going to be all over it.
Dylan, that sounds good. And again, congratulations on starting and finishing your first NASCAR Sprint Cup Series race with BK Racing. I'm going to throw you over to my good friend, Steven, and don't be a stranger. We'll stay in touch with Ron. We'd like to have you back on again, bud.
All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Dylan, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight. you know, last year in 2015, you were racing the NASCAR Xfinity Series part-time out there, and you were able to go to road courses with Mid-Ohio and out there in Road America. You had some pretty decent finishes out there, 9th and 13th out there. Talk about a little bit of the differences in between the Xfinity Series cars and the Sprint Cup Series car, and what the differences were between your experience out there in Mid-Ohio and Road America and what Sonoma is. And with Sonoma being somewhat of a home track for you from coming out there in California and you having kind of that hometown experience out there.
Yeah, well, first off, you know, these Cup cars, they have a lot more power than Xfinity cars. I found that, you know, it was a lot harder to just throttle control was a lot harder. Just trying to get some forward drive without spinning these tires was something we were fighting all day long. It was just kind of get the car to rotate in the center of the corner, good enough so I could get good forward drive off the corner. You know, I had no experience at Mid-Ohio or Road America before heading to those tracks. It seems like, you know, obviously the Xfinity Series is a little less competitive than these Cup Series. So coming over to the Cup Series was quite a challenge, only having 30 laps on the track before race day in a Cup car. You know, it led to me making a few mistakes throughout the day. And, you know, we should have finished better. However, seems like we just couldn't get a good grasp on the setup this weekend. But it was just an awesome opportunity to be able to have my friends and family out at the track and the local sponsors out at the track also to experience my debut with me. It was you know, a moment I'll never forget.
And you coming out there from California, there seems to be a lot of drivers here in the last fair few amount of years that have influx from California, and there seems to be a lot of teams out there. You've got Bill McNally racing, and you race for Sunshine Racing, Ford Racing out there, and there's so many other teams that have come out there. You've got Cole Custer, Kevin Harvick, obviously, but there's just been an influx of a lot of drivers that have been coming from California over the last couple of years. And really, when you take a look at California sometimes in general, is that a lot of people don't necessarily look at it and think of it as a stock car-centric, you know, area. They look at it more, they have a very unique car culture out there, but it's more of a different car culture than what stock cars are really known for. You know, stock cars are, you know, you made the change into stock cars and came out to the East Coast and obviously for the K&N East Series and Xfinity and now Sprint Cup. What was the driving factor, obviously, of you getting into and pursuing that career in stock cars from coming from California, and just your goals and how you came up throughout that out there, especially in California where there's not a lot of tracks out there to compete around? I know that Irwindale is out there and a couple other Paris Auto Speedway and a couple others, but there's so few tracks out there for a lot of young and upcoming racing drivers that want to really compete and get into the stock car series. That, you know, how did you get into it, and how did you pursue that career out there to make that goal to move on and get into the K&N and obviously Xfinity and Sprint Cup?
Yeah, so you know, dirt racing's pretty strong in the Sacramento area. However, I started racing go karts when I turned 13 years old, and race up at Sonoma Raceway, actually. That was like my home track. We'd go there like every week, and it seemed like. And I just raced go-karts for a few years, 3 years, and traveled around. And there's a race up in Vegas, Super Nationals, and out there was a stock car team owner, Tim Hulston, with High Point Racing. And he had an S2 car and like a late model set up at the go-kart track, and he was talking about like an open test day where we come out and, you know, drive a car. And, you know, we got talking with Tim, and next thing you know, I was scheduled for a full year racing in the S2 cars down at Irwindale Speedway. And then after that year, I raced a year late models at Irwindale. And then from there, we moved on out to the East Coast for my racing. Now, still living on the West Coast, but, you know, all the races I was doing was out in North Carolina, Virginia. But it's crazy to think all the talent that's come out of California. You know, you got Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson. Then you got a handful more drivers that come out of here. So I'm just trying to follow in those guys' footsteps and, show everyone that, California has some of the best drivers out there.
Yeah, there certainly has been in the last couple of years a lot of drivers coming out there. And, unfortunately, every time that, it seems like you turn around, there's one track or another that, is unfortunately being torn down out there. And I think Irwindale kind of got a little bit of an extended reprieve yet again. I don't know how much longer they're going to continue to be open out there. Every time you kind of turn around, they're scheduled to run races and they get a little bit of a reprieve. But, there's unfortunately, not too many tracks out there. And it's guys like you and everybody else, unfortunately, has to make that move out here to the East Coast or somewhere else to continue their career. But, as you've continued your career and obviously in the K&N and, you've moved on to the Xfinity and now Sprint Cup, your overall goals as you continue on as a driver, and you've just talked about it just a little bit, but your goals ongoing for this season, and you may be putting it together something later on with Ron and BK Racing, but as your goals continue throughout your career, what is the biggest stumbling blocks that you've continued to run into? And we always hear the sponsorship and the money is the biggest thing, but aside from the sponsorship, aside from the money, what is some of your personal stumbling blocks that sometimes when you approach a team or sometimes you approach a sponsor, you approach somebody with an opportunity, what are those hurdles that sometimes you have to go up against just to make the opportunity happen?
Well, like you said, funding is the main one, but other than that, a lot of people don't realize, the time and devotion that this sport really takes. It's a full-time job, my biggest thing was trying to balance school and racing. I would have to kind of schedule my appearances and interviews and even research time for marketing. And going after sponsors, I'd have to kind of balance that around going to school and doing homework. But fortunately, I just graduated college, so I got a degree in finance. So now I'm able to really, really focus on racing and don't really have any, not distractions, because obviously education is key for success, I believe. But definitely going to be – these next few months are going to be a time for me just to really focus on racing and trying to make it a full-time career for myself.
Well, Dylan, I appreciate it, you taking the time on here. And congratulations on making your first Sprint Cup Series race out there in Sonoma this past weekend, and good luck going forward throughout the rest of this year. As we always do with everybody else, please, before we get off of here, make sure you thank your sponsors and let everybody know how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah, I'm very excited that we had the opportunity to have Bell Brothers, Elk Grove Toyota, come on the car for this weekend, and I look forward to future partnerships, hopefully, with those two companies, and then also very excited to have Dr. Pepper on the car this weekend. As I move forward, I know Dr. Pepper will be with BK Racing and on the 93 car. And then obviously all the fans and listeners out there, you can follow me at Lupton Dylan on Twitter and Instagram, and then Facebook at Dylan Lupton Racing.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Thank you.
Steven, that was a good conversation with Dylan there. I mean, congrats. I mean, he made his first cut race. I mean, But before we come up on the top of the hour here, the number to call in is 215 383-3681 at the top of our was that presser based on the National Speedway, Mr. Chip Wild. Steve, while we got a few minutes, if I can, let's talk a little bit about last year with the deal with Kyle Busch. You know, he had that wreck at Daytona, and NASCAR granted him to come back in. He had to finish in the top 30 in points, and he had to win a race. Well, he come back and just exploded and won the championship. Now, this is Tony Stewart's last year. He is, I think he's 31st in points. Correct me if I'm wrong,
32nd in points is what he's currently running behind.
Okay, thank you. And he's got his first win. Okay, wouldn't this be a Cinderella story for Tony Stewart to come in and just dominate, you know, because he always comes in late. He's always been a late bloomer like he has in the – you know, back in the day. Could we see Tony Stewart actually come in and win his championship?
I mean, that's how he won his last championship. I mean, he took the thing yet again all the way down to Homestead Miami Speedway just a handful of years ago at the very early inception of Stewart Haas Racing. It just came down to a handful of laps. And I... You know, Tony's 49 years old, or I think he's, or is he, yeah, I think he's about 49 years old. So, I mean, he could still win races. I don't think it's any doubt in my mind that he can't win races. I mean, it showed through on Sunday. You know, he had poise, he had control of that car. He's like any other race car driver. Of course, he's going to mess up. And I don't think that's necessarily, Denny Hamlin messed up too, and he's much, much younger. But,
yeah.
You know, he's got 9 points. I think he can get by Regan Smith. I think he can get into that 30th spot. I don't think it's going to be a problem with that. I think the competition level that when it comes to the races and the cutoffs, I think that is something that Tony has not had to endure before. When he won his last Sprint Cup Series championship, he did not have to endure cutoffs. And I think, if anything, that is going to be the biggest hurdle that Tony is going to have to endure. And he's going to have to get beyond and going to have a lot of luck on his side. Because there is a lot of luck involved into this. I mean, you take Kevin Harvick, you take a lot of these drivers that, you know, have had luck to get through some of these races and be able to move on. And it can happen in a hurry. Talladega is a cutoff race. Tony Stewart can win plate races. I mean, he's won at Daytona. That's not a problem with Tony and winning at plate races. I think the biggest problem yet again is the unknown factor of what could happen if you don't win.
Yeah, and one thing, like we all hear, Stephen, momentum. I mean, he's on a high now. He's coming off of momentum. Momentum means a lot also, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, momentum is a driving factor in this sometimes. I think they're on a high note. I think they're coming back and doing what they need to do. I think his crew chief is, you know, doing what he needs to do to make Tony competitive. I don't think there's anything over at Stewart Haas Racing that they could possibly do differently. Tony as a driver, between what they have going on, between everything within the shop, the chassis they're getting, the engines from Hendrix, I don't think there's anything different they can be doing. It's just a matter of luck falling sometimes on your side to make sure that everything is just there. And I think that's just where we are right at this moment. And some of it is just trying to get past those Joe Gibbs Racing cars. Those guys are just, you know, sometimes just, you know, impermeable. You just can't get past them. And I think that that's just a tough act to follow sometimes.
Yeah. And Stephen, let's take a little short break. The number to call in is 215-383-3681. We'd love to have your questions on Dylan Look and anything going on in the chase. Call in. But we're live from Talladega, Alabama, with Timmy Spain and Stephen Wilson. We'll be right back. I'm Tim Spain alongside the good team, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com. Up there in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Mr. Stephen Wilson. Stephen, we're going to Daytona this weekend. Under the light, what should we expect?
Well, I think we should expect the unexpected. again, we're coming to Daytona in July. I've looked at the forecast for this weekend, and we got rain again, both Friday and Saturday. So not only are we possibly looking at a little bit of delay, but we may also maybe be looking at a hurry up and get to the halfway point, or possibly, a little bit of delays within the race. It could potentially be another Talladega incident, or if we go back and look at all the way back to July of 2015 with the late race caution or the last lap caution there in July, which we saw last year. A lot of things can happen at Daytona in July, and, you know, it's going to be exciting for everybody there who's going to come out there and watch this race. It's always a fun time when you get to watch Daytona under the lights.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, you have been to Daytona, I think you went down for the 500, correct? You didn't go for the July race, right?
I have been, yes. I went down there for the 500 last year, but I have been there for the Coke Zero 400 many times in the past. I was there for the first one when they ran this thing under lights. And what for most people don't know is the very first time that they tried to run this thing under lights, there was actually fires in Florida, and they had to postpone this thing. And the very next year, when they finally did get to put this thing underneath the lights, it was a very exciting event out there. Back then, it was known as the Pepsi 400, but since changed its name. But very exciting event out there. I got to watch. It was Dale Earnhardt and Dale Jarrett fight this thing out underneath the lights for the first time there at Daytona.
I bet that was awesome. And Stephen, let's welcome President of Daytona International Speedway into the show, Mr. Chip Wild.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Chip, how you doing tonight, bud?
Man, that's quite an intro. I got something to live up to.
Well, thanks, Chip. You know, we had you on back when you were president up there at Darlington, and we appreciate you taking time out to come on the show. We know your time's limited, so I'm going to go ahead and hand you over to Stephen Wilson, SpeedwayDigest.com, and we'll get some questions going on. Congratulations on being president down there, bud.
Well, thank you. It's truly an honor.
You're
Chip,
welcome.
I appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight. First thing I want to ask you about is earlier today you guys just announced that you're going to follow up the 600 miles of remembrance on Friday night in the Firecracker 250 out there with NASCAR Salutes and American Salute and NASCAR Xfinity Series, where a lot of every one of the cars out there will be carrying a military unit and installations from all the branches out there. Talk about what that really means, not only to Daytona International, but just to the 4th of July weekend and what you guys are just doing to just honor everybody that, you know, on this 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, you know, I think the cool thing or the differentiator between the Daytona 500 and Speed Weeks and our summer races here is that we do really recognize the military. I've been in the sport my whole career, and I feel like we do the best job in sports and honoring our military on a weekly basis. But this really gives us a platform to really stop and acknowledge what they do for us and all that the military does to keep us free. And so it's going to be great to have all those units on the race cars. We're going to have some Congressional Medal of Honor recipients for the 8th straight year be a part of our entire weekend. So they come into town tomorrow. We're going to do a luncheon for them on Friday. They'll be recognized Friday night and then again on Saturday night. So really, really, really great that we're going to have those guys here. We're going to do a salute on Saturday night the race car drivers are going to do a salute on Saturday night during the pre-race and then during the parade lap. So, you know, a ton of opportunity for us to really step back and say thanks to our military.
And the Coke Zero 400 this weekend, and Daytona 500, a massive renovation down there. $500 million went into this new motorsports stadium that just really transformed Daytona into something spectacular down there, moving everybody there to the front stretch. Everybody's just going to have a view of pit road, everything that goes on down there at the track. The amenities that has been added and upgraded there at Daytona from just a handful of years ago. You know, this is going to be the first time under the lights that the race has been run there in this format, in this facility. What is this to Daytona? How is Daytona preparing for this? And what is the difference between the Daytona 500 atmosphere and the Coke Zero 400 atmosphere now that it's being run under the lights in this stadium?
Yeah, you know, the difference, I think, between the two races is this is more of a normal NASCAR race. When I say that, it's a regional event. You know, we pull from Alabama, we pull from Georgia, we pull from South Carolina. Obviously, pull our fans from Florida, where you know the Daytona 500. We pull people from across the globe, and I think that's what differentiates it. We're going to have a pre-race concert on Saturday night, just like we do for the Daytona 500. Montgomery Gentry is going to play a 60-minute concert. So, you know, we're continuing to add value to folks when they come to the racetrack, providing them additional content. But as far as the stadium's concerned, you know, we learned some things during the Rolex 24 and then during Speed Weeks and then during Bike Week that we're going to implement this weekend. You build a stadium with an idea in mind, but until you actually see an execution, you're not really sure, okay, how do the consumers go to different levels and where do they move and how do they egress, how do they ingress? So we've made some adjustments to the stadium to accommodate that. But, you know, overall, this is unlike any other motorsports experience in the world. You think about all the amenities that we've added over the last 3 years, you know, 40 escalators, twice as many bathrooms, three times as many concession stands, neighborhoods throughout the over 1 mile stadium where folks can, you know, take a step out of the action on the track and come back and enjoy the sights and sounds without being right there in front of it. We added 101,000 brand new comfortable seats across the front stretch. So, you know, the project has obviously been massive and well documented, but now that we have it in execution, it's spectacular, and I think it's certainly going to change how our company at least views how we do things, right? So, you know, we're continuing to look at other properties in our company and, okay, what's next and how are we going to enhance the fan experience for them?
In Summer Speed Week, obviously, over the years, since it's been the Firecracker 400, the Pepsi 400, now the Coke Zero 400, you know, it's changed in the dynamics for over the years. We've run in the day, we've run in the night. You know, as I was just talking before you came on the air, you know, I was there when the lights were put in. Unfortunately, the fires marred the first year, and it had to be run a year later underneath the lights. You know, the dynamic, like I said, has changed. And this year, we're halfway through the Sprint Cup Series schedule. We've got this chase that we're ready to get into just in a matter of a few weeks when we get back to Richmond. But you know, a lot of these drivers, this is their opportunity to be able to come in and pull out something where they may not be able to get another chance at, especially drivers that, you know, we've seen at Talladega, for example, like a David Reagan, that underfunded teams. And these are places that it kind of the status quo doesn't exactly mean anything. What are your expectations for these drivers and for these teams when they come into Daytona and when they start racing on Saturday night?
You know, I've had the ability and really the privilege to work for some incredible race teams over the last 15 years. I worked for Roger Penske, obviously a very well-funded team there. I also worked for Bill Davis Racing for a number of years. And, you know, I would argue we were a B-tier team, so we weren't the bottom of the barrel, but certainly weren't funded like a Hendrick Motorsports or a Richard Childress Racing. And we knew that when we came to Daytona, we had an opportunity to win. It was one of four opportunities every year that the playing field is as equal as it's ever going to be. So we've done well there. We won the Daytona 500 in 2001. So, you know, it is truly the great equalizer because about how much horsepower you have, it's, you know, who will work with you, how will you guys manage throughout the race, and then timing it right so you get to the front right there at the end. But if you look at what we've been able to do or what the racetrack breeds over the last couple of years, you know, it comes down to the last corner of the last lap, and that's what these race fans love. You don't know until you get to the start finish line who has won. You look at the Daytona 500 this year with the closest finish in the event's history, with Denny Hamlin pulling it out. You know, those are the kind of finishes that we've become accustomed to at Daytona, because anybody can win, and that's what makes it exciting, not only for the fans but also for these drivers who know that, hey, this is one of four opportunities for me to get to victory lane and stamp my ticket into the chase.
And the future is obviously there in Daytona. We were just talking there about the stadium, obviously. But, you know, when we go into the future of not only the stadium itself, but Daytona in general, you guys are bringing in so many different events. And this is, you know, arguably your last biggest event of the year going forward. How do you cap your season off? How do you go into the future? And how do you look back on your season from not only the Daytona 500 and this Coke Zero 400 and start beginning to prepare for 2017 and just looking back at the fan response, the driver's responses, and where you would like to go into the future?
Yeah, you know, we still have quite a bit of activity left to get through this year. We're hosting the Ferrari World Finals first week in December here. So we still have a lot of work left to do. But as we reflect back on the first half of the season, I think we've done some amazing things. You know, obviously, I've only been a part of this team for 6 or 8 weeks. But if you see the output that these folks put into these events and how they do it at such a high level on a weekly basis. You know, since I've gotten to Daytona, which was the end of April, right, we've hosted a 3-day country music festival where we had almost 100,000 people on the property. We've had a number of days where the property's being used for either testing or for petty rides. And then we had the Global Rallycross cars on track, 2 weeks ago. So there's a lot of activity, and it's amazing to see the team and how they with one another, and they just continue to produce such high level events every week. And I think that's what they're accustomed to. You know, you think about from January, middle of January, really, until now, there's something going on at the racetrack about every week, and not just a little something. You know, these are huge events. These are premier events in whatever discipline that we're talking about. Obviously, the Rolex 24 is the biggest road race in North America. Then you roll right into Speed Weeks, right, which is the biggest race on our schedule. And then 2 weeks later, we're going into Bike Week and all the things that happen there. And then a couple of weeks later, we have Jeep Beach. And then we have, I mean, you can name, you could go on and on and on. So these guys, they deserve a vacation. So I'll tell you, after the Coke Zero, they're all going to take a deep breath and take a couple of weeks off, which is well-deserved. And then we'll come back and regroup and kind of get ready to end our year. And then, man, the Daytona 500 are going to be here before we know it.
And my last question for you is that not only capping off everything that you guys have done down there in Daytona, you also are moving the Motorsports Hall of Fame of America from Michigan down there, and it will officially open this weekend on Sunday. Talk a little bit about that and what that means to Daytona and the World Center of Racing.
Yeah, it's just a natural fit. I had the opportunity today to go in and check it out and kind of view what they've done. They still got a couple things to do to the place, but it looks fantastic. Use the old Velocitorium, which used to be the old Daytona USA down here. So it's now included in the track tour. So we see a number of folks that come to town just to see the racetrack, and now they have the ability to go through and see the Motorsports Hall of Fame. It is spectacular. It's not just auto racing. It's boats and airplanes and, you know, old race cars and different disciplines within racing. So they've done a really nice job, and I think it'll be a nice addition for us, for our guests that come on to check out the racetrack, but also for them. You know, it's a guaranteed audience. They're getting a lot of people that come through the attraction every week, which is great. So I think it's a win-win. I know Joey Chitwer worked really hard on that project, and I'm certainly glad to see that come to fruition and now getting into execution. But you know, it's a great opportunity for fans to come in and not only see the racetrack, but then learn a little bit about auto racing and the history.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you taking the time, and I'm going to throw you back over to Tim. I think he's got one or two questions, but appreciate it, and best of luck this weekend with the Coke Zero 400 and the Subway 250.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, David. Chip, leaving Darlington Raceway, where I was fortunate enough to attend last year with the throwback paint scheme. One iconic racetrack to another iconic racetrack. I mean, you know, this is awesome. I mean, you know, y'all done the throwback at Darlington, which we're going back to the throwback deal this time, Labor Day weekend. But, I mean, how does it feel to go from from Darlington to Daytona. I mean, they're both iconic racetracks, man.
Yeah, no question. You know, I've been very, very fortunate in my career to be a part of some really special things. And certainly, you know, getting the opportunity to go to Darlington and lead that team and really try to reinvent the place. And it, certainly I take no credit for that. We have an incredible group of men and women who have dedicated their careers to making sure Darlington is special. And excuse me, I just had the opportunity to, you know, to support them. And the throwback initiative was one of the fan favorites last year. You know, we won just about every award, but it is a testament to our team there. And then, you know, going from Darlington to here is, it's like I'm still dreaming a bit. You know, I remember flying in for my first day. I've flown into Daytona, gosh, 50 times over the last 15 years. You know, usually you fly in and you're going to go race and then you're going home. And, you know, coming in on final approach and looking over the left side of the airplane at what now was going to be my home in the Daytona International Speedway, it just felt different. And, you know, it's an amazing opportunity for my wife, Catherine, and our family and myself to be here and be a part of this group. And you know, we got big shoes to fill. Joey Chitwood's done amazing things here, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be challenging. But I would say that was kind of the same way I felt going into Darlington. I knew how important the racetrack was, not only to the sport, but to our community. Same thing goes here. I mean, obviously the Daytona 500 and the Daytona International Speedway is so, so critical to the success of our sport, but also we're great communities to continue to toe that line. And that's something that I'm really looking forward to being a part of.
And Chip, my final question before we let you go, and again, thank you for staying on longer than you agreed to stay on. Daytona, like you and Steven talked about, there's so many new amenities, the escalators and stuff, and we're trying to bring everything back to the like the Millennium crew, you know, I don't want to tell my age, but, you know, I'm 46, but you're trying to bring everything back to get the younger generation in. And correct me if I'm wrong, did I hear where there's going to be some Wi-Fi spots at Daytona?
Yeah, our entire stadium is wired for Wi-Fi. So if you come onto the stadium, you can get Wi-Fi throughout every level, every concourse. And in fact, we've even added some Wi-Fi to the infield. So I think the majority of our infield is now wired for Wi-Fi, which is incredible. But that's what consumers expect when they go to a stadium now. And so we got to continue to live up to being the world center of racing. And there's a standard we hold ourselves to. So, you know, having those amenities, like you said, Wi-Fi throughout the entire stadium is something that fans should expect when they come here. It shouldn't be a surprise. It should be an expectation. And that's why this team is so good, is because they think of those things and they hold themselves to a higher standard, and we've been able to deliver. But, you know, that's just one of a number of amenities that the stadium has brought to life. And I think that it will continue to enhance the guest experience. I mean, it's something that NASCAR globally we're focused on, is making sure that we continue to enhance the fan experience. And Daytona is going to certainly lead the charge on that.
I'll have to jump on a plane with Grant Lynch and Russell Benham here next year. Come down, Chip.
yeah,
I will. I'll get Russell. I'll send Russell a text here in a minute. I'm going to 500 with you next year. But, you know, here at Talladega, Chip, you know, they do that little food deal, and there's a lot of tracks that do different things. You know, back, I think it was last year, we had the big meatball deal. I love talking about food, just like my good friend Steve Post at MRN. He loves talking about food. And they done I think it was some type of hot dog cheese thing, but do y'all do any exotic food deals or anything like that like we do here at Talladega?
Yeah, well, so we have a number of offerings that really aren't, I would call, normal racetrack offerings. I mean, we have fish tacos. We have, they're more high-end, but certainly give a number of options to folks when they come to the racetrack. Like at Darlington, we did throwback food offerings at throwback prices. So, you know, that's part of the experience. When you go, you want to have a little bit of that local flair. So, obviously, being very close to the water, we try to incorporate as much seafood as possible. But there is such a wide variety of food offerings on every level here, in Daytona, which, again, just makes us best in class.
And speaking of Darlington, I hate to go from Daytona back to Darlington, but I mean, those are my two favorite tracks. I've still got my two newspapers from last year from up there at Darlington from Jeff Gordon. One last dance with the lady in black. I got to get them framed, Chip.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's great to talk to you, and look forward to this weekend's race.
All right, Chip. Thank you very much. Good luck on everything this weekend. We'll talk at you later, bud.
Great. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. All right, Steven. Chip Wild there. Coming up, we've been on almost an hour and a half, Steven. And I'm glad he stayed on longer than what he could. Have you got the TV schedule for everything this weekend at Daytona? Can you hear me, sir?
The brand new International Speedway Stater, a 160 laps, 400 miles out there from the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series underneath the lights out there for strict plate racing at its finest. And I think we lost him out of here tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to finish out the show, and appreciate everybody coming on, listening out tonight. Dylan Lupton from BK Racing, Chip Wild from Daytona, and from all of us here at the Pit Stop, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next Tuesday night. Thank you.
Yeah.